Conservative? You bet. Controversial? Right again. It's time to squabble on the Jim Benson Show.
Tens of thousands of videos, I can't even keep track of it, and politicians and sports people celebrating and saying, kill his wife, kill his kids. This crazy. Is destroying them. Churches are full of people. I'm being mobbed. Everybody I talk to says this was big. This, they really crossed the line here. What do you think they've done here, and why are they so tone deaf?
Well, they're tone deaf because liberalism is a mental disorder. People don't seem to understand. I wrote that book in 2003, and you, people call me and say, I don't know why they're doing this, why they're doing that. I said, if you plug this into the formula, it answers your question. Liberalism is a mental disorder. If you're mentally disordered, you can't think reasonably. You act emotionally. And then you go to the deepest part of your emotions, which usually contains hatred. And the hatred comes out. And that is what we are seeing from the left. It's like a gigantic purge of everything that is in them. It's all evil. It's all dark, it's all vile, it's all hateful, and it's all very, very deadly and dangerous for a nation because liberalism, my friends, unfortunately, is now a violent mental disorder.
The government fears Alex Jones, who has the largest audience in the country, bigger than any of the networks, the biggest megaphone in the country.
The deep state hates Alex Jones with a vengeance.
Alex Jones is the most extraordinary person I've ever met.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Jim Benson Show, conservative news and commentary addressing the issues that concern you here on the BBS radio and television network. The video clip you just saw here was from a recent edition of the Alex Jones Show on Infowars.com and at Real Alex Jones on X.com, and it featured part of an interview Jones was doing with renowned conservative commentator Dr. Michael Savage on the violence of the political left in America. This discussion, you hear Dr. Savage use the term now, saying that now the political left has become a violent movement. But I think he was speaking relatively here with the use of the term now, since the left has literally been at war with America, which it wants to utterly destroy and enslave for many years now. However, its promotion of political violence seems to have gotten worse, much worse, with its own political setbacks in recent years. With the assassination of conservative commentator and political activist Charlie Kirk earlier this month, the vile evil and destructiveness of this movement and its horrific insanity has become too evident. And more Americans are calling for mobilization to oppose and stop this grave threat to our nation and Western civilization. And of course, as always, all this must be done legally and morally, and we are not calling for any type of violence or illegality in response to the left's insanity and illegal activities. On today's program, we're going to again focus on the Charlie Kirk political assassination and its aftermath, because this event and its consequences have brought to light for many of us the grave dangers we still face from communism, including the new public relations name for communism, globalism, and its allies and supporters around the world. These entities are fighting for world government totalitarianism and the turning of America, Europe, and other nations into enslaved vassal states. Today, we will not be getting into all the conspiracy theories about Charlie Kirk's murder or what I consider to be a catastrophic security failure that led to Kirk's death. I believe the FBI, under the leadership of Director Kash Patel and Deputy Director Dan Bongino, will do its due diligence and duty and thoroughly investigate the matter to the fullest extent of the Bureau's abilities while working with other law enforcement and government agencies involved. That said, I do want to present in our next video presentation today part of a recent YouTube video from the channel China Observer. In this video, it is alleged that Kirk's alleged assassin, Tyler Robinson, was a, quote, key member, close quote, of the Democratic Socialists of America, a longtime communist activist group with powerful influence on college campuses and among young people. The video also speculates possible funding of the DSA and therefore involvement in the assassination, one way or another, by the Chinese Communist Party, or CCP as it is more commonly known, which the channel points out has great resentment of Kirk, who saw the CCP as the number one threat to America today. I find all this fascinating, but in fairness, without conclusive evidence, nothing has been proven. But I have not seen these allegations made anywhere else.
Counting or not counting gang violence.
Oh my God.
Wait, Freddy, go, run, run!
A gunshot echoed once again, shaking the world. An evil bullet claimed the life of a young opinion leader. The United States may be at a critical turning point as the shadow behind the assassin becomes clearer. Many Chinese may not be familiar with the rising conservative figure Charlie Kirk. But here's the truth. Charlie Kirk is a significant threat to the Chinese Communist Party. This murder is not just an act of hate. It is an extremely vile political assassination. On September 10th, during a speech in Utah, Kirk was fatally shot from 200 yards away while discussing the highly sensitive issue of transgender rights. The event sent shockwaves worldwide, and the CCP's response has been especially eye-catching. Within 48 hours, the CCP-affiliated Observer Network published an editorial on its front page with the striking headline, "Kirk's Death, Lighter Than a Feather." The article even quoted Mao Zedong claiming Kirk was selling his soul to fascists, and thus his death was not regrettable. This was no mere news commentary. It was a blatant moral judgment. The death of the enemy is not only unworthy of sympathy, but also worthy of celebration. Recent reports reveal that the assassin, Tyler Robinson, is a key member of the American Democratic Socialist of America, DSA. This organization maintains close ties with left-wing groups in Cuba, Venezuela, and Brazil, openly praises the CCP, and actively promotes cooperation with the regime. As of 2023, the DSA has nearly 95,000 members, with branches in major cities across the United States, particularly on college campuses where its influence is immense. There is widespread suspicion that such a large organization could operate for so long without substantial financial backing, and it is highly likely that the CCP, known for its generous funding, is the primary sponsor. On September 11th, Utah Governor Spencer Cox issued a warning at a press conference after Charlie Kirk's assassination. CCP and Russian-backed online bots were spreading misleading content to incite violence. Cox emphasized there is a tremendous amount of disinformation we are tracking. Our adversaries from Russia, China, and other nations are trying to instill disinformation and encourage violence. Researchers pointed out that this effort aims to exploit political divisions within the US to create chaos. An August report by the online analytics company Graphica revealed that beyond social media, fake websites were using AI tools to disguise themselves as legitimate news outlets. The report identified 11 domains and 16 related accounts that were whitewashing English reports from the CCP's CCTV International channel, CGTN. The report stated that CGTN broadcast pro-CCP anti-Western content in multiple languages using AI tools to generate custom logos and text targeted at specific audiences, including young viewers in Africa, the Americas, Asia, and Europe. Let's briefly introduce who Charlie Kirk is and why the CCP hates him so much. Charlie Kirk was born in 1993 in Arlington Heights, Illinois, and grew up in Chicago. His mother is a mental health counselor, and his father is an architect. As a teenager, Kirk earned the rank of Eagle Scout, the highest honor in American Scouting, which reflects his exceptional leadership qualities. Kirk first became involved in politics during high school when he volunteered for a senator's campaign in his state. In 2012, at the age of 18, Kirk co-founded the nonprofit organization Turning Point USA. The organization promotes conservative political ideas on high school and college campuses, advocating for a return to America's founding principles and Christian values. Kirk believes that left-wing ideologies dominate U.S. campuses and that young people are being brainwashed by cultural Marxism, which is why there needs to be a platform to inspire youth to encourage the conservative movement. This has made him one of the most prominent voices of young conservatives during the Trump era and a key ally of Trump. He spoke at the 2024 Republican National Convention and was a key figure in pushing for J.D. Vance to be the vice presidential candidate. As a conservative youth activist in the U.S., Kirk's main views are widely known, even if you haven't heard his speeches or debates. First, he is strongly opposed to illegal immigration, especially criticizing the growing Muslim population in the U.S., and he is outspoken in his criticism of the so-called Islamization of America. On racial issues, Kirk believes that the challenges faced by Black Americans are not due to systemic racism, but rather the absence of fathers. Second, he is a vocal opponent of wokeism and diversity, equity, and inclusion, DEI, initiatives. On issues of gender and family ethics, he holds very traditional Christian views, insisting that there are only two genders and calling transgender identity a harmful lie to children. Third, in public policy, he opposes high welfare programs controlled by big government, advocating for free markets and limited government, emphasizing personal responsibility. These are core conservative beliefs that many are familiar with. Some analysts suggest that Kirk's views are not far from those presented by Russell Kirk in his 1974 book, The Conservative Mind, where he discusses the foundation of American order. This American order, according to Russell Kirk, comes from the Jewish traditions of Jerusalem, emphasizing covenant faithfulness to God as well as the democratic and freedom-loving spirit of ancient Athens and the rule of law from ancient Rome. In summary, American order is a freedom with boundaries, freedom where individuals take responsibility and respect the freedom of others. While Charlie Kirk's views aren't particularly new, why has he been labeled as far right or even fascist? This may have to do with the way he expresses his opinion. Kirk often engages in face-to-face debates, sparking intense exchanges. He is fearless in accepting challenges and never shies away from speaking his mind, making him a true practitioner of real-world debate. He enjoys visiting colleges and left-wing strongholds to initiate debates. His famous catchphrase is, "Come and prove me wrong." His approach is bold, sharp, and full of youthful energy. Kirk's debating style mirrors the public debates of ancient Greek and Roman politicians, confronting the public in opposition directly, displaying the traits of classical statesmen. He often tackles the most controversial topics, such as transgender issues, reverse racial discrimination under the guise of racial equality, and the concept of America's original sin, the idea that America was founded on the exploitation of slaves, and therefore from its inception, the country was inherently evil. Of course, Kirk strongly criticizes this view. Unfortunately, this unapologetic style can easily provoke hatred, especially when his opponent are thoroughly defeated in these public impromptu debates. In these open, unpolished intellectual exchanges, mistakes and misinterpretations inevitably occur, and his enemies will seize on these to magnify his flaws, even taking his words out of context, demonizing him. This is why we often see so-called extreme statements from him on platforms like TikTok. Yet his critics are ignoring a key fact. He has never forced his views on others, nor has he ever threatened anyone. He hasn't made economic threats, such as taking away someone's livelihood, nor physical threats to safety, or even emotional threats. He simply expresses his views through debate, aiming to influence others with his thoughts and logic. Charlie Kirk was an eloquent, energetic speaker. While some who disagreed with him may have found him aggressive and offensive, he always emphasized the importance of dialogue and reasoning. His enemies resorted to bullets to silence him, but in doing so, they not only failed, but also exposed who the true fascists and extremists are. The CCP's response to Kirk's murder, along with the information that has emerged, clearly reveals who his real enemies were.
Next with our video presentations today is discussion of Charlie Kirk's life and influence on American society by the YouTube channel Wolves in Finance and its host, Zach DiGregorio.
On Wednesday, September 10th, Charlie Kirk was assassinated at a college campus in Utah. Some of my older viewers may not have heard about Charlie Kirk before this, but most young people know who he is. He founded an organization called Turning Point USA. The idea was to energize young people around conservative values. Charlie Kirk became famous by going to college campuses and debating issues with students.
What's your name?
None of your business, unfortunately, but...
Okay, hello, nice to meet you, none of your business.
Thank you, I appreciate it. So, do you love America?
Yes, I do.
I hate America. Every state in the USA should be an independent country. What do you think of this?
Fuck off the mic, dude.
Well, I just first have to ask, since you hate the country, do you plan to leave?
That, what do you mean by that?
Do you plan to go live in another country?
No, I do not.
Well, you're an idiot.
Let me tell you something.
Your face is an idiot.
America is the only country where even those who hate it refuse to leave. That's how you know you live in a great country.
I'm sure you are aware that college campuses have become increasingly hostile towards conservative students. On most college campuses, it is against the rules to even speak your opinion on certain political issues. You cannot speak out against Black Lives Matter, even though we know that the money collected was being used to purchase a $6 million mansion in California. You cannot speak out against illegal immigration, even though the violent rioters are burning down Los Angeles. You cannot speak out against trans people in women's sports, even though the majority of Americans do not agree with it. There are numerous examples of professors losing their jobs over these topics, like Jordan Peterson. You cannot speak out on basic political issues on college campuses, or it will be labeled as hate speech. I want to be clear about this. According to the Pew Research poll in February 2025, two-thirds of Americans believe that trans people should be banned from women's sports. This idea that so many people believe you cannot talk about on college campuses. This is why Charlie Kirk made such an impact. Because young people were dying to have a space where they could speak their mind. Charlie Kirk gave them a taste of what freedom of speech was like. I'm going to show you the impact that Charlie Kirk had. This is polling data from Pew Research from 2023 to 2025, showing Democrat versus Republican voters. What you see is that young men shifted Republican by 44 points in 2 years. That is largely because of Charlie Kirk. When Donald Trump won the election in 2024, there were a handful of people who contributed to making that possible. Charlie Kirk was one of those people. Young men were one of the reasons that Donald Trump won the election, and Charlie Kirk changed the course of human history.
Gen Z is going to be the most right-wing generation in 50 years. Statistically speaking, there was a huge turnout of youth voters for Donald Trump that was unexpected, something that's usually a Democratic stronghold. There's probably no individual more responsible for that than Charlie Kirk. You really can't underestimate and downplay how influential he was in activating young people and how hand in hand he was working with the Trump campaign to turn out younger voters. And I would just say this, echoing what David said, which is, you don't have to agree with a damn thing that he said, but he did it the way you're supposed to. He showed up and he debated people and he engaged them to their faces. He wasn't a keyboard warrior. He wasn't threatening people. That is how a civil society conducts itself. You go to places and you have debates on the issues of our day. And that's what he modeled. So any of his acolytes who are taking it a different direction, you're not honoring his legacy.
The issues surrounding Charlie Kirk's death have been growing for some time. I want to go back 2 years before Charlie Kirk died. In 2023, Riley Gaines went to speak at San Francisco State University and was physically beaten and held hostage by trans protesters. Now, if you don't remember who Riley Gaines is, she swam against trans swimmer Leah Thomas. She tied Leah Thomas for fifth place in the 200 freestyle finals at the NCAA championships. The officials took the fifth place medal, gave it to Leah Thomas, and made Riley Gaines hold the sixth place medal because they wanted the transgender swimmer to have the photo op. They told Riley Gaines that they would send her medal in the mail. And she is standing there, being humiliated on the podium, thinking to herself, this is not fair. So she started speaking out against biological men competing in women's sports. This was when most people were first starting to hear about trans issues. It took a lot of courage for Riley Gaines to speak out, and she was viciously attacked. So when she went to speak at the college in 2023, she was met by violent protesters. Here is footage from Riley Gaines' phone of her being chased down the hall.
Yeah, you fucking trans fucking
I'm showing this to you because I don't think a lot of people realize the viciousness of these people. College campuses today are not like they used to be. Riley Gaines is crying. She was just physically hit. And this protester is mocking her and saying that trans rights are human rights. The protesters held her hostage, demanding money, or they would not let her go. They are on video saying, "Tell her to pay us and then she can go. $10 each.
Tell her to pay us. Tell her to pay us and then she can go. $10 each.
Let us be clear about what happened. Riley Gaines was held hostage on the third floor of this building for almost 3 hours because of her political beliefs that biological men should not play in women's sports. Why are we okay with this as a society? Luckily, Riley Gaines was able to get away. The university started an investigation, but later decided not to file any charges at all. Not a single person faced any accountability. Given what happened to Charlie Kirk, I think people are starting to realize how lucky we are that Riley Gaines is still alive. I'm going to show you what Charlie Kirk said on X.com after Riley Gaines was assaulted in 2023. When every campus conservative speaker is labeled a Nazi, a fascist, a racist, or is somehow wanting a trans genocide by radical student groups and their allies in the mainstream media and administrations, these domestic extremists feel free to assault and terrorize. Enough is enough. There must be real legal, educational, and career consequences for these criminals, and conservative states must lead the way. Why didn't we listen to Charlie Kirk? 5 months before his death, Charlie posted this. Assassination culture is spreading on the left. 48% of liberals say it would be at least somewhat justified to murder Elon Musk. 55% said the same about Donald Trump. In California, activists are naming ballot measures after Luigi Mangione. The left is being whipped into a violent frenzy. Any setback, whether losing an election or losing a court case, justifies a maximally violent response. This is the natural outgrowth of left-wing protest culture tolerating violence and mayhem for years on end. The cowardice of local prosecutors and school officials have turned the left into a ticking time bomb. Why didn't we listen to Charlie Kirk? Fast forward to 2 weeks before Charlie Kirk died. On August 22, 2025, a 23-year-old girl was viciously murdered by a black man on a train in North Carolina.
This stop is Stanley Park Station. Please exit right.
We found out that the man who stabbed her was arrested 14 times before. Then we found out that the judge who let him out the last time was not even a licensed lawyer. This murder was so brutal that it shocked the country. People were confused why there was very little coverage of it in the mainstream media. The same news outlets that covered the death of George Floyd nonstop were saying nothing about this young girl. Charlie Kirk stepped up. He posted this on Twitter. Dear CNN, Washington Post, New York Times, ABC, NBC, etc., etc., if you want to know why your ratings are in the tank and no one likes you, look no further than the brutal murder of Irina Zarutska, who moved to the U.S. to escape war in Ukraine, a story you refuse to tell. Sadly, she couldn't survive the Democrats' criminal justice system. Yet you wouldn't shut up or stop villainizing Daniel Penny, a hero who probably stopped a murder just like hers. Why? Because he was a straight, white, American male, and the perp was black. Shame on you, genuinely. CNN did a segment covering Charlie Kirk's comments, accusing him of racism.
But also, I mean, people like Charlie Kirk fan, they've been looking for opportunities to make this some sort of like reciprocal George Floyd situation. And that's the part that I think he's almost giving away the game. And it's sad to see a lot of people going along with it.
You know, let me just say a couple of things. One is, I mean, what happened to that young woman was horrible. And it's everybody's nightmare. If you're in any public space, a subway, whatever, that something bad is going to happen to you or somebody you care about. So it does strike a chord. We don't know why that man did what he did. And for Charlie Kirk to say, we know he did it because she's white, when there's no evidence of that, it's just pure race mongering, hate mongering. It's wrong. But it becomes an opportunity for people to jump on bandwagons. And then for someone like Charlie Kirk, he should be ashamed of himself. No one mentioned the word race, white, black, or anything except him. What people mentioned is the horror of what happened to this young woman.
But it turns out that Charlie Kirk was correct. It was racially motivated.
And every step of the way, he's talking about his motive. I got that white girl. I got that white girl. Well, that is ugly, but I'm not surprised. When I saw it, I'm not surprised that there was a racial component, no. I would say, though, that that's very important, don't you think? I mean, this is a hate crime.
She was stabbed because of the color of her skin. And for some reason, we have to go to a report from Newsmax to get the truth about what happened. And meanwhile, on CNN, they are telling us lies and calling Charlie Kirk a racist for pointing out a simple truth, that the mainstream media was biased for political reasons. We can all see it. The media posted nonstop stories about the death of George Floyd, but they are virtually silent on the death of this young woman. Charlie Kirk was just brave enough to say it out loud. The last person that Charlie Kirk replied to on X.com before he died was someone named Matt Van Swall, who posted about the murder saying, "I don't think you understand the level of radicalization this has caused within me. I will never be the same person after watching this video. We do not have to live this way." Charlie Kirk replied, "Yep." The person talking on CNN was someone named Van Jones. Let me tell you about Van Jones. This is what he said after George Floyd died.
It's not the racist white person who's in the Ku Klux Klan that we have to worry about. It's the white liberal Hillary Clinton supporter walking her dog in Central Park who would tell you right now, people like that, "Oh, I don't see race. Race is no big deal to me. I see us all as the same. I give to charities." But the minute she sees a black man who she does not respect or who she has a slight thought against, she weaponized race like she had been trained by the Aryan Nation. A Klans member could not have been better trained to pick up the police and pick up her phone and tell the police, "It's a black man, African-American man, come get him." So even the most liberal, well-intentioned white person has a virus in his or her brain that can be activated at an instant. And so what you're seeing now is a curtain falling away. And those of us who have been burdened by this every minute, every second of our entire lives are fragile right now. We are fragile right now. We are tired.
He says that white people have a virus in their brain. I have to say that it seems like Van Jones is the racist. There are so many people out there who accuse Charlie Kirk of hate speech, but I have yet to find a single example from Charlie Kirk of hate speech. Is it because he was against trans people in women's sports? Is that hate speech? Or is that just a political opinion? Is it because he was for strong borders? Is that hate speech? Or is that just a political opinion? Let me show you Charlie Kirk in his own words, and you tell me if this is hate speech.
Feminist, and I don't hate men.
Okay, so you are a self-described feminist. What is a woman?
Why do you want to know?
I'm infinitely curious.
What's a man?
You're looking at one.
Why do you think that that's important to you, what a man and a woman is? So do you treat men and women differently?
Well, it depends in what context, though. Politically, no. Under the law, no. Should they be treated differently in a societal customs and norms? Yes.
Why?
Like, we should open doors for women. We should honor and protect women.
I want to honor and protect you, man.
Okay, great. Thank you. Women are worthy of protection. Can you tell me what a woman is since you're a feminist?
You're saying these things because you're trying to get a gotcha.
You're a feminist. Shouldn't you be able to tell me what a woman is?
I'm a feminist.
Isn't that probably important to feminism? What is the woman that you're trying to advance and protect? Isn't that integral to, is that the whole feminist project? The war against.
What a woman is the only way that you can get a gotcha over everybody else. Why is it so important to you to define things in certain categories? How does that help your day-to-day life?
Like, what other categories in the human species are there besides male and female?
Well, I just think that categorization is usually unhelpful when we're trying to improve society, right?
I have XY chromosomes.
Okay.
Can I give birth?
No, you can't.
Bingo. That's why categorization matters.
Is asking the question, what is a woman, is that hate speech? Because it seems to me like this is respectful debate. In fact, Charlie Kirk spent more time talking about religion than politics.
I'm lucky to have found the love of my life. However, she's not where I am in my journey with Christ, and I want to have a marriage centered around Christ, and I want to know what are some of the best ways I can help guide her towards our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ so that we can share a happy future together.
It's a phenomenal question. What is her objection as to why she will not follow Jesus?
She doesn't really know how there can be a higher power when there's so much evil in the world.
So here's what you should say. Their evil cannot exist if there is no standard of good. She only knows something is evil because she believes there's a transcendent good. Evil does not exist. Evil is just an opinion if there is no God. Murder is not wrong if there is no God. Stealing is not wrong if there is no God. So the way to convince her of that is that you're not the first person to wrestle with the question of evil. The more important question is it actually evil? Or is it just an opinion? And we know as believers that there's an absolute standard above us that we appeal to. The Bible tells us two things. God will use all things for good for those who love him, Romans 12:2. But that might not satisfy her. Instead, the question of evil should be, we as Christians, we have to explain a couple things. It's really tough for us to wrestle with the fact that these girls are at Christian summer camp and they get washed away in a flood. It's tough, right? We have to explain child cancer and flooding and earthquakes. But the atheist, they have to explain everything else. They have to explain why we exist. What is love? What is mercy? Why is it that our universe came to being? Is there a standard of good? Is there a standard of evil? Just because there is evil does not mean there is no God. In fact, it means the only reason you know it's evil is because there's a transcendent, perfect standard of good, and that is God himself.
Are you a Christian?
Very, very much so.
Like, why is that exactly?
Oh, Jesus saved my life. I'm a sinner, gave my life to Christ, most important decision I ever made.
So you believe the Bible is real?
Yes, I believe the Bible is true and real.
Yeah. Why is that?
Well, I could give you the technical answer. There's never been an archaeological discovery that has contradicted the truth of the Bible. And then, of course, the wisdom. There is not a truth of the Bible that if you apply to your life does not improve dramatically. And then finally, we have the most accurate and transparent, historically robust account that one can have of the most important figure ever to live in the history of the world, Jesus of Nazareth. And the resurrection is the pinpoint of my belief that Jesus did rise from the grave so that we may live.
What makes Christian mythology real?
So that's not mythology, but that is theology. If Genesis 1:1 and the resurrection is true, anything in the Bible is possible. You're looking at the greatest miracle. The greatest miracle is creation. And then the fact that Jesus rose from the dead. And I say, how do you know that Jesus rose from the dead? Well, show me another historical piece of a story where so many people willingly died a brutal death for a lie. every single person around him had everything to lose, and yet they went to the absolute death, from Paul to Peter to the half-brother of James, saying that Jesus is Lord, Jesus rose from the dead. Not to mention, if you were going to fake a story, you would not use female witnesses in the ancient world. In the scriptures, it said that the women were the first one to see Jesus Christ. If you're trying to fake a story, you would never do that.
Our country was founded on common law. Because the Declaration only refers to God four times in the Constitution. It doesn't refer to God at all. And it only articulates the structure of government.
So first of all, remember that we were a collection of states and colonies. And you need to read the state constitutions before anything else. 13 out of 13 required a declaration of faith. In almost every single one of the original state constitutions, they had, I profess Lord and Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior. Secondly, 55 out of 56 of the original signers of the Declaration were Bible-believing, church-attending Christians. You asked about common law. Well, let's go to three principles of common law. Presumption of innocence, due process, and jury of your peers. All three are biblical principles. So, and all wrapped into the ultimate biblical principle that you shall not favor justice if you are rich or poor, which is in Leviticus 19, which is the idea of blind justice, which is incorporated also in the New Testament ideal. Neither slave nor Greek nor Jew, you are all one in Jesus Christ, as you read the idea of human equality. These are all biblical ideas, but more importantly than that, they say that God was only mentioned four times in the Declaration of Independence. Well, that's a big deal. John Adams famously said the Constitution was only written for a moral and religious people. It was wholly inadequate for the people of any other. The body politic of America was so Christian that our form and structure of government was built for the people that believed in Christ our Lord. One of the reasons we're living through a constitutional crisis is that we no longer have a Christian nation, but we have a Christian form of government, and they're incompatible. So you cannot have liberty if you do not have a Christian population.
I'm showing Charlie Kirk in his own words, so there is no miscommunication in what he said. He was telling young people the benefits of conservative values. He was encouraging people to raise families and believe in God.
Our fourth video today is from Dr. Steve Turley's YouTube channel and discusses President Trump's designation of the communist Antifa, an acronym for anti-fascist, groups. Antifa groups are the Antifa organization overall, as terrorist organizations, amid the realization that they and their funders and supporters are engaged in a true war with America and American civilization.
Let's dive right in here, gang. We are now 8 days from the most horrific, murderous act that we have yet seen committed by what President Trump is calling radical left-wing terrorism in our nation. And last night, in response to this heinous act, President Trump made the declaration that millions of patriots have been waiting for. Antifa is now officially a major terrorist organization. Taking to True Social, Trump announced, quote, "I am pleased to inform our many USA patriots that I am designating Antifa, a sick, dangerous, radical left disaster, as a major terrorist organization." But here's what makes this announcement truly revolutionary. Trump didn't stop there. He's going after their funding sources. Quote, "I will also be strongly recommending that those funding Antifa be thoroughly investigated in accordance with the highest legal standards and practices." So this means that the likes of George Soros and his network of dark money organizations are finally in the crosshairs, metaphorically speaking, of course. Now, what does this terrorist designation actually mean? Well, the legal implications are staggering. Once declared a terrorist organization, asset blocking becomes immediate. Financial institutions are legally obligated to freeze Antifa-related funds. Any material support at all, even suspected, automatically becomes a federal crime, meaning anyone providing money, goods, services, or even training faces serious prison time. Travel restrictions kick in, and the FBI's counterterrorism units are now fully mobilized against this radical network. In other words, and again, we've been saying this now for the past 8 days, the fact that Trump is now using the T word, radical left-wing terrorism, to describe the basic apparatus of the left means that he is bringing the full force of the federal government on the fundamental structure of the Democrat Party. It does appear that the Trump administration is indeed in the process of fully dismantling the basic network of the Democrat Party. I've been saying it over and over again. They have no idea what they unleashed as of last Wednesday. They have no idea what they have unleashed. And it's not just the federal government. One of the major fallouts from Charlie's assassination that the legacy media is desperately trying to hide from you is the fact that far-left college students that have been celebrating Charlie's murder are getting expelled from universities all across the country. This is absolutely glorious. The ripple effects of our massive conservative cultural uprising are already transforming our educational landscape. In fact, the sheer scale and scope of disciplinary action against students right now who celebrated Charlie's assassination is absolutely unprecedented in modern American higher education. Texas State University expelled an unnamed student within hours of Governor Greg Abbott's direct intervention after viral footage showing the individual climbing onto a campus statue declaring, "Hey, my name's Charlie Kirk," and then grotesquely reenacting the assassination by striking his neck and collapsing to the ground. Well, the only thing that now appears to be collapsing to the ground is that idiot's future. Texas Tech University followed suit by expelling 18-year-old Cameron Gazelle Booker from Dallas, who was not only kicked out of school after grotesquely mocking Charlie, but also she was arrested for her behavior. Beyond these high-profile cases, at least a dozen faculty members and administrators across multiple universities have faced termination or suspension for their social media celebrations of Kirk's murder. Again, according to the Texas Education Agency, over 281 complaints have been filed against educators across Texas alone, with officials launching formal investigations into what Commissioner Mike Morath has called reprehensible and inappropriate content on social media, again, among educators. Make no mistake, this represents the largest coordinated crackdown on leftist extremism in our educational institutions ever, with the ripple effects extending far beyond the Lodestar State. Now, of course, you're not going to hear this from the legacy media. So it's not just universities. Unfortunately, primary and secondary schools are seeing a purge of teachers who celebrated Charlie's death. So in California, several teachers have been placed on leave, while a number of school districts in Texas have fired teachers that were found to have posted incendiary comments online. And even overseas, the hammer is dropping, if you can believe it. Oxford Union's incoming student president is facing disciplinary proceedings and a vote of no confidence after over 200 life members signed a petition that, by the way, that's 50 more than required following his social media celebration of Kirk's murder. Swing back here to the United States, the numbers tell a very clear story. We have now seen over 300 documented cases of disciplinary action across K-12 and higher education college campuses, with new terminations and expulsions reported daily as conservative activists continue identifying celebrants of political assassination. This represents the largest coordinated response to leftist extremism in American educational history, signaling a fundamental shift in how institutions respond to the celebration of political violence. And of course, as you know, we've been reporting on this for the last several days, but the corporate sector has joined the educational purge, with at least 8 major companies, we're talking NASDAQ, MSNBC, and the Carolina Panthers, firing employees for mocking Kirk's assassination. We are witnessing a systematic crackdown on leftist extremism across America. Universities that were, in many ways, always the terrorist sleeper cells in our nation are finally realizing that harboring radical ideologies comes with severe consequences. The days of professors and students alike celebrating political assassinations without repercussions are over. For far too long, conservatives have played defense while radical leftists controlled the cultural and educational narrative. Charlie Kirk's assassination represents a true turning point because it finally exposed the true nature of our opposition. The mask got completely ripped off. Far from being peaceful protesters or anti-fascists, they revealed themselves to be domestic terrorists who celebrate the murder of those who dare to speak conservative truth. President Trump's Antifa designation, combined with unprecedented university disciplinary actions, signals that the era of consequence-free leftist extremism is officially over. The same movement that burned American cities during the George Floyd riots, that attacked conservative speakers on college campuses, and that celebrated the assassination of a brilliant young husband and father, is finally and decisively being held accountable. Make no mistake. This is just the beginning.
Lastly today, here's a short clip from President Trump's speech a few days ago at the United Nations building in New York City, blasting the fraud and hoax of climate change that the political left has succeeded in foisting upon many of the nations of the West to their great detriment. As far as I'm concerned, the sudden stoppage of the escalator in the UN building there in New York City, just as the Trumps stepped on it on their way to the president's address of the UN General Assembly, was no accident. It was meant as a gesture of contempt and embarrassment for the president to belittle and humiliate him. I believe this is done by more of the UN's totalitarian worshiping bureaucrats working diligently to destroy Western civilization and force its nations into becoming enslaved vassal states of a communist world government. These radical globalist ideologues have been carrying out their world government promotion madness for many years now while being paid fat salaries largely financed with American tax dollars. In other words, we have been financing our own self-destruction. It's high time America pulled all funding from this monstrously evil organization. Let the UN be funded by the likes of globalist billionaires, Bill Gates, the old friend of the CCP, George Soros and his son Alexander, who Alex Jones contends is overseeing the funding and direction of Antifa, and Larry Fink, head of the world's largest asset management fund, BlackRock, and now co-chair of the World Economic Forum. Fink's WEF put out a video a few years ago predicting that by 2030, quote, you'll own nothing and you'll be happy. This bizarre video also proclaimed that Western nations would have to do a better job of welcoming a billion new supposed refugees from the third world into their countries. This, of course, would completely destroy Western civilization. Apparently, the leftist billionaires and government and business leaders supporting globalist institutions like the UN and WEF somehow amazingly believe that they will be left untouched and still wealthy and powerful amid all the civilizational carnage they're working so diligently for.
Global warming, not happening. You know, it used to be global cooling. If you look back years ago in the 1920s and the 1930s, they said global cooling will kill the world. We have to do something. Then they said global warming will kill the world. But then it started getting cooler. So now they could just call it climate change because that way they can't miss. It's climate change. Because if it goes higher or lower, whatever the hell happens, there's climate change. It's the greatest con job ever perpetrated on the world, in my opinion. Climate change, no matter what happens, you're involved in that. No more global warming, no more global cooling. All of these predictions made by the United Nations and many others, often for bad reasons, were wrong. They were made by stupid people that have cost their country's fortunes and given those same countries no chance for success. If you don't get away from this green scam, your country is going to fail. All green is all bankrupt. That's what it represents. And it's not politically correct. I'll be very badly criticized for saying it, but I'm here to tell the truth. I don't care. It doesn't matter to me. And I'm telling you that if you don't get away from the green energy scam, your country is going to fail. And if you don't stop people that you've never seen before, that you have nothing in common with, your country is going to fail.
That's all for today's show. As always, we hope you found today's content of interest and value. You can watch and or listen to a podcast of today's show when it's posted shortly here on the Jim Benson Show pages at bbsradio.com/The Jim Benson Show. And also on the internet, including x.com at jamesb50309177. Also on rumble.com and Apple Podcasts. While you're at it, if you visit my pages here at bbsradio.com/The Jim Benson Show, scroll down on my index page, that's the first page there, and check out our related videos section. Look for us again 2 weeks from today in this same time slot with another episode of our show. Have a great rest of your day and evening.